Hello and welcome to the latest podcast, Less Talking, More Running. What was I talking about? Professionalism. Hello and welcome to the latest Less Talking, More Running, a podcast brought to you by Aycliffe Running Club. Hello, Corey. How are you today?
I'm good, mate. It's number 10. It's the last one of season one. I'm looking forward to it.
Season one. I like this. It's almost like it's a US series that you do in a box set.
Yeah, we've got plans for series two, don't we? We've kind of semi-discussed them. We're going to expand it a bit more and hopefully wider our audience from on the back of that. But that's all I'm going to say for now.
Oh, keeping it secret. Right, well, tonight, I've got two titles for tonight's podcast. I'm going to let you choose when you put it up. I'm going to go with either Mud is Good or Getting Down and Dirty.
Yes, I've seen you put two, and I haven't decided yet. So I've got a few days to think about it.
All right. Well, for those who haven't quite twigged on what we're going to discuss this evening, it is all things cross country. So there's probably a good chance that you did cross country in school and probably hated it. There's probably even a chance that you've done some cross country as an experienced runner or as a member of the club and probably still hated it. But we're going to try and convince you that mud is good. What about you, Corey? What's your view of cross country? I know you've done a few.
Yeah, well, again, that I did a lot of it at school just basically to keep fit for football season. Yeah, I hated it. but I was surprisingly good at it. I won 2 years in a row the inter house cross country. So I don't know how it worked at your schools, but we had three houses and it was like a little competition against each other. And I won it, I think, year eight and year nine. So that was me at the peak of my powers at running. Some of you may know who Dean Newton is. I played football with Dean and also ran with him, and I beat him in those early years. He's obviously gone on to do some amazing times and run some local races. But that's my little claim to fame. I used to be quicker than Dean Newton.
How often do you mention that to him?
50% of the time. it's just to keep him grounded, that's all.
Ah, right, okay. You went to school in Darlington, though, didn't you? Were you Carmel?
Yeah, I went to Carmel. It was a surprise choice. It was a last-minute one.
No, I was going to ask you where you did your cross-country. So obviously, I was Hummersknott. So
we used
to do our cross country around the waterworks, and I remember one very chilly March morning, we decided that because it was Comic Relief that week, and it was the year they brought out the Comic Relief boxer shorts. We all did our cross country in Comic Relief boxer shorts that week around the waterworks. But I was just intrigued where you as Carmel might have done your cross country.
Well, we didn't do anything daft like that. just for our school one, we literally just did it around because we have a field on the front. And the field on the back, and the field on the back's got some mounds on and that. And there's a little alleyway which around the back of the school, which crossed the two fields together. So we just did it around there, really. And then for the town competition, I think we did it. I think most of the years we did it at Branksome. I don't know if you've ever run at Branksome School before.
No, I did do the town cross country. I town cross country, it was at Longfield, and I finished eighth. And then so I ended up doing. Like a county-wide one. No idea where that was, because it must have been when I was in the fourth year comprehensive, so we're talking like a good 30-plus years ago now, and I can't remember where that was. So I did it at school, but I wouldn't say that I was a huge advocate of it. And I have to say, I mean, I've always been a committed road runner first and foremost, but over the last two or three years, I've really enjoyed the cross-country that I've done, so... Anyway, I have my first iconic runner clue for you, and you won't be surprised to know it is cross-country related.
I think you've really enjoyed this iconic runner's little segment, Paul.
I've quite enjoyed it, I must admit, especially the ones whereby, you know, I've tried to tie them into the theme, so I quite liked it when we had the party. And I had Joe Pavey's parkrun stats and stuff like that. So this runner that I've got tonight has got some very impressive cross-country stats. So this runner the most successful runner in the history of the IAAF World Cross Country Championships, with 6 long course titles and 5 short course titles. See, now, what I love about the fact that we do this in lockdown and we're doing this in the current environment is that we've recorded all these podcasts over Skype. So I'm not revealing anything to the audience here. And just the look on your face there of deep thoughtfulness as to who it might be. Are there no bells ringing there, Corey?
No, I'm quite one for stats, but I've gone off it the past year. I've just not really. Like, I look up a runner and go on a Wikipedia and just look at all the stats and all, and just proper intrigued by it. And when you mentioned like long course and short course and all those medals, like, I remember looking at some runners like that, but no names are coming to me. That's how little I've been looking up recently, which is quite bad because I should really do some prep for this, which I do, but I do zero prep for this icon of runners clue segment thing. I guessed one. I was quite proud of that. And when Richard got it the other week, and he was probably buzzing afterwards, saying he was buzzing that he got it. So it is quite an achievement if we get these right, Paul. You make them quite difficult at times, not going to lie.
You say that, but I've chosen some pretty well-known runners. I haven't like completely off-piste.
Oh, yeah. Some of them are, but the ones, I don't know. It could go either way, really. But what I remember when we had when it was Kelly, Michaela, and Richard on, their faces were just like mine. There, it was like, I should know this, but nothing's coming to me.
Well, I tell you what, the next two clues are probably a bit easier. So hopefully, you might get them on one of those. Mm. Anyway, back to cross country then. So for the uninitiated, what is it that we're talking about when it comes to cross country? Well, the cross country season typically runs from mid-September to March. It involves running on off-road courses and usually some of them are on lapped courses. We've got many of our best athletes from Mo Farah, Paul of Radcliffe, very much grounded in a decent cross country season. And Mo still makes the odd appearance at events to these days. I always like to see Mo at the cross country event in Edinburgh just after New Year. That one quite often. I remember seeing him a couple of years ago. He was beaten by, is it Garrett Heath, the American?
Yeah, but he's American. Yeah, he's got like long hair, rugged.
Long hair and a beard. He's absolutely rugged, but he just ploughed through the mud. You know, you see more sort of like kind of like barely touching the surface and gliding across it. And Garrett Heath was just absolutely ploughing through it, just pure brute force, and beat him on the day. And I remember watching it thinking, bloody hell, it's a very different thing. A very different beast is cross country when you watch it like that.
Oh, definitely.
But yeah, so I mean, even our current elite runners promote cross country. And I mean, Steph Twell, who was, I think she ran in the marathon yesterday, didn't she? She describes cross country as her bread and butter training during winter. So, you know, she wouldn't have been put off by the rain at the London Marathon yesterday. So it's good that sort of like, you know, the elite athletes do still practice it and take part in it. Obviously, you've got a huge variety of courses and conditions underfoot. You can have flat, hilly, muddy, firm, twisty, short courses. Makes me think of some of the NYSD League courses. I can't remember if it's Whitby or Summerhill, the one that's got the rope next to it that you have to helps you up the hill.
Yeah, well, I've never done Summerhill, but I've done Whitby a couple of times. It's always been good weather, Whitby, for me so far. But the year I didn't do it, apparently it was snowing and there was a rope on that. It's not a hill, it's a climb. You're on your all hands and knees, literally like rock climbing up. And I remember they said that there was a rope, that one. But there may be a rope for Summerhill as well. I'm not sure.
I've never done either, but I've heard stories from, I was thinking it was Summerhill, but it makes you wonder when you need sort of like crampons or something like that to get up a hill on a cross country course. And it's always worse if you're the last race of the day and you've had about 3 or 4 races go around the course first. It's all churned up and everything. What's your favourite NYSD course then?
My favourite one is probably, I enjoyed Preston Park. They had that on 1 year around, for people who don't know where Preston Park is, it's Butterfly World. I enjoyed that one. That was fairly easy, but still had some twists and turns and up and down hills, but I enjoyed that one. Fox Rush was it was a nice one to go around, but kind of a bit repetitive. I'm surprisingly a big fan of Acklam. I've done that 3 times.
Yes, I quite like that one, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why. I'm a big fan of it. I think it reminds me of my days running at school cross country. I think it is around a school, isn't it?
Yeah, it starts on a couple of school fields, and then you kind of like go through into a little wooded area. And this is something I've mentioned on one of my little notes later on as well. One of the things about cross country is obviously the course, you start off sometimes with a massive start line with people lined up right across it. But eventually, at some point, you're going to get a narrow pinch point where only one or two people can get through. And that's where your race track comes in. And when you're sort of like having to read the course and think about it, and maybe worthwhile walking the course before you start, because otherwise, you know, you're going to get to these points and it's just going to be an absolute bottleneck. But yeah, you've got a couple of those, I think, at Acklam, where it goes into a tight wooded area. And then there's a metal bridge, and you go down through another little wooded area again. And then, if memory serves, you've got a really short, sharp hill back up towards where the start finish or where you start the second lap. And I think you have to do that 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
But I've got to ask, all that being very muddy 1 year and having to run up the side, because again, that's something else. If you follow the route that everyone else has taken, yeah, could be running through sort of like inches deep worth of mud. Whereas if you're quite canny and use maybe the grass verge at the side where maybe not so many people have gone, you still get a bit of purchase and a bit of grip off the grass. I think there's a little hill like that at Acklam as well.
Yeah, as each lap goes on, because there are about, some of them are 2 miles a lap, you get proper churned up. And I remember, like, each lap you're taking slightly different lines, because it's some laps you're even looking for a line to try and just keep moving because it's that churned up. You're slowing down walking just to try and keep upright and to look ahead to see, right, where can I direct my next line to get some speed back up. So you're always thinking about it. It's not like on the road you're just running. You are looking ahead, thinking, what's on the horizon and how can I best tackle it?
Definitely. I mean, that's one of the things I think whenever I've done a cross-country training session or, you know, sort of like trying to give any advice, it's always that kind of, you've got to, it's almost having that strategy in your mind or having that kind of like that foresight. You've got to plan ahead. As you say, it's not like a tarmac where you can just think, you know, right, I'm running on this road for the next 6 miles, plod, 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 plod. Every foot strike's different. You know, you've got to be so on the button with it and things like that. Any other NYSD? Courses come to mind. I'll tell you what I quite like. I don't know if, I think you have done it actually, because I think either you give me a lift 1 year. The Thirsk relays,
yeah,
cross country relays. Yeah, I quite like that because you can get into your teams, and I mean it's not so much a race. So I think you're probably only running for about 15 minutes. I think it's 2 laps, isn't it, around the flats at Thirsk. But you're in your teams, and it's quite sort of like good for the camaraderie, really, I think, that one. Although in saying that, I mean, it's a relatively easy course. There's nothing particularly, well, never muddy about it, or there's no great hills on it or anything along those lines.
No, I suppose it is always September time where the weather's still relatively good. But I think, yeah, you're right, it is a good way to kind of kick off the cross-country season in your teams and trying to get more people involved. And I think, I remember the first year I did it, I did Thirsk and thought, oh, this is really good. And Acklam was the next one. And for our old club, we had quite a number of people turn up for it, which is brilliant to see. And that's what it's all about, really.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. Have you done much of the Northeast Harriers League then? Obviously, you know, you're relatively new to the Aircliffe Running Club, much as I am. Probably I've been here for 2 or 3 years. I took the opportunity to do some races as a second claim member. I was a non-counter for the team, but I could still run in the Aircliffe vest. So I ran on a few of the courses. Have you had a chance to do any of the Northeast Harriers League yet?
I just did Temple Park.
Oh, yeah, we did that one, didn't we? Yeah.
I think that was this year, wasn't it?
Start of this year.
I think the course was, it was half it was good, half it was not so good. I think you know which way around I'm on about.
Yeah. I remember a soggy bit.
Oh yes, that was a nightmare. I think that was just after that bit. After that was fine. When it's up and down and you just focus on twists and turns is fine. And when it comes a bit more open and you're dragging yourself through the mud and you've got wind coming at you, maybe some rain, that's where you start to question, why did I bother getting up early for this?
Character building, I think they call it. I think that's what it is. Yeah. I've done a few of them in North East Harriers League. I think my favourite has been Reckington. I quite like that course. And I've done that two or three times, I think, now. One year it was reversed, but I think that was for the North Eastern Cross Country Champs. And it was the other way around. I remember doing, I think it's Thornley Hill Farm. It was a brutal day in terms of the wind. And it's terribly sort of like hilly up and down and stuff like that. But I think as I came round for the second lap, maybe the last lap, the third lap, there was a tent blowing across the course just where the start-finish point was. And people trying to obviously hastily capture it and stuff like that because the wind was just so bad that day. Well, that's one of the things about cross country, it being the time of year that it is, you are faced with some brutal conditions sometimes. And that's, again, something else, one of the differences between that and maybe road races or track or something like that. Although those that have ran the track races last weekend or who ran Elvington this weekend will complain about the wind, but it's probably nothing compared to something you get on some of the exposed cross country courses.
Yeah, so definitely we're complaining about those ones down at York and Elvington.
Yeah.
when it comes to cross country, I think they'd be wishing they were back at Elvington there. Oh, what was it? Was it on a runway? The race
tonight. Oh, yeah, last weekend. Yeah. Did Andy not do 10 laps for his marathon? And I don't think I'd, I don't think that'd be interested to me.
No.
Speaking about the elements as well and cross country, we always have to mention this one, the Northeasterns in 2015, and we always use the hashtag I survived Sedgefield because the snow that day was terrible. And I know we put some photographs up after one of the podcasts earlier a couple of months ago, and I always remember me running around, I had a cap on to keep the snow out of my glasses, but of course by the time I'd finished I had that layer of snow on the peak of the cap because it was absolutely that bad on the day. But yeah, there's always these lovely things. I think one of them's got a water hazard as well, hasn't it? I remember a picture of one of our former club members knee deep in a sort of like puddle. I think that's Hartlepool as well. Some courses have got a lot to answer for. Right, shall I move on to the second clue for our iconic runner and see if you can see if this sheds any light on it for you. So the first clue obviously reflected their very successful cross-country career, 6 long course titles and 5 short course titles. So the second clue, this
2 seconds, Paul. Alexa, go ahead.
This runner won the 10,000 metre title at the World Championships on 4 consecutive occasions. So this runner won the 10,000 metre title at the World Championships on 4 consecutive occasions.
I think I've got him.
Oh.
Is it him?
I haven't said whether it's a him or not.
No. Well, I'm going to say it is a him. I was going to say another clue to kind of confirm it, but I don't want to give anything away. I'll say that for after the third clue.
All right. Okay.
See if I'm on the right lines. If not, okay. I'm way off.
Okay. Interesting. It's interesting that you think it's a him, but you know, that's just an assumption, I guess.
It's not an assumption. It's a educated guess.
Okay. Fair enough then. No problem. Right. Okay. Cross country running again. I mean, obviously I frequently bang on about the benefits of cross-country running. Obviously, absolutely fantastic for developing endurance, especially the undulations and the hills. So you power up your legs and obviously having to cope with differing paces, with a change of terrain, great for cardiovascular work. You got any other benefits for cross-country training there, Corey?
Yeah, strength work. I think just before we touch on it, for the benefits of cross-country, we mentioned it in the injury prevention podcast with Andy and Ryan about getting that strength and conditioning work, which is incredibly beneficial. And I put out a post to our group page today about, is stretching beneficial, and a physio wrote a blog about it. And the bottom line is, if you use it in a cool down, then maybe, but really it's all about mobility work and strength work to become a better runner. And I think that's where the research is pointing towards these days. And it's no surprise that some of the best runners in the world do cross country. It's their bread and butter, so to speak. So cross country, it's massively good for making the lower limbs stronger. So when it comes to the road, you just glide, or hopefully glide, some of us still don't, glide on the road. Because you're used to that, the grass and the different kind of fields or whatever, so to speak, different surfaces, you're absorbing shock in different ways, and your body's adapting to that, and it's adapting in a good way. So when it comes to the road, hopefully you're just a million miles better.
Yeah, it's all about with your lower leg. It's all about where your foot placement goes and how your foot reacts. So stabilizing muscles that you're getting stronger and things like that. Obviously, you know, every time you put your foot down, you could be putting it down with just a slightly different angle or something along those lines. And as you say, it is about that ability to absorb the shock and keeping the momentum going on the soft surface as well. That's hard work. I mean, obviously, when you're running, as some of our members run in these great big sort of like cushioned Nike shoes these days with a carbon plate in them, you know, they get that kind of like that return off the road, you know, thanks to the plate and thanks to the foam, you know, they're bouncing along. You don't get that kind of return off mud. Basically, you're going to have to generate that return and that power that you're going to get to move yourself forward and develop your momentum. And again, that's where your strength's going to be developed. There's very, very few sort of like bits of equipment that you can use to sort of like gain any great advantage on cross country. It's all about you and what the power that you generate. I mean, obviously you've got these spikes on, you know, if you're sensible, you've got spikes on anyway, but you know, there's nothing that you're going to get any give out of, you know, out of a plate and your spikes or anything along those lines. There's a lot to be said for the strength work that you do that way as well. And also, I mean, it's great for your core. I mean, you'll know about this as well, because it's probably something akin to what you're studying. But obviously, you're running with your whole body, because with the twists and the turns, you know, you have to brace your body sometimes, make sure you're not going to fall, not going to slip over. So your core will have to, you know, gets a lot stronger as well when you're running cross country. And again, that's something else. Again, I strongly advocate whenever I'm doing any cross country sessions. So what you should do, hopefully, by the end of it all, is have a better road season the following year.
Yeah, 100%. You've obviously started some cross-country sessions with the club. You did them last year as well. Some Saturday mornings during the cross-country season. I think quite a few of the members enjoyed it. I don't know, do other clubs put on cross-country sessions?
I know one does locally, obviously, but they might do it in a more informal manner. I'm not too sure, you know, and obviously, you know, some of the sessions that we did do since we restarted as well were off road. We Richard, obviously, and Donna brought in some off road sessions as well. So you can do it sort of like throughout the year. But I mean, I know that I've read Julian Gorter's book, The Art of Running Faster, and he basically says if you want to run faster off road, then you have to practice off road. So I always tend to think, well, doing sort of like some sessions off road, something that can be a little bit challenging, you know, not even if you're, you know, sort of like going at it 100%, because at the end of the day, you're never going to maybe attribute or maybe sort of like get the times that you run on the road when you're running off-road, due to the nature of the resistance from the terrain, you know, you're probably going up a few more hills and things along those lines. And we've mentioned that push-off, you know, sort of like off the soft ground, you're not going to get and generate the same power that you do possibly off the road or off a firmer surface. So really, when you're coming to doing cross-country, you may be thinking about maintaining the same effort level rather than trying to maintain the same pace. And if you maintain the same effort throughout and be consistent throughout, that's probably as, you know, sort of like as good as you're going to get. Obviously, at some points, you're going to be running faster than at other points, you're going to be running slower, depending on the terrain that you're on, depending on whether you're sort of like gliding across some nice firm grass or whether you're kind of like 6 inches in mud, you know, but really want to try and maintain the same level of power or the same level of effort that you're putting in. But I think that, you know, practicing the off-road sessions, you know, we did one a couple of Saturdays ago now. And as you say, we did some last year as well. And I mean, they were quite well received last year. I think sort of like we tended to get about a dozen members to each one last year. But I think we had 9 or 10 at the one the other Saturday. You know, it's... You know, it is what it is. It's off-road running. It's not for everybody. It's a bit wet. It's a bit muddy sometimes. But, you know, sometimes they're the better sessions. I certainly know that I'll give her a mention. Tracy Pickering absolutely loves them. She keeps asking when are we going to bring them back in and all sorts. But no, we, you know, sort of like I'm hopeful that we've got a program of another 5 or 6 Saturday mornings booked in. Going up through to the middle of December, and if you know members are interested in doing them, I'd love to see them come along, so that'd be great.
Just with your point on you know your pace is a lot slower because of the terrain and all that, doesn't it take the pressure off it? Because sometimes some people turn up to road-based sessions and think, right, tonight for each trip I've got to hit this pace, and if I'm not, I might be disappointed. Where if you turn up to a cross-country session, it literally is, like you said, putting in the effort. As long as you put in the effort, that's all that matters. And because there's no numbers, so to speak, to back it up, then you kind of, you're taking it for how you feel after. Say you go to the gym and you're just doing a general workout, you feel tired afterwards, you feel great. That's what sometimes what it's all about, ignoring all the data, because sometimes we're too bothered about numbers and all that, and we get too hooked up on it. Where if you just go out and just put in the effort and tire your body, sometimes that I think that's better. That's my opinion anyway. I know some people, some members love the numbers, but I think sometimes you need to put that to one side.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's one of the things about cross country, I guess, is even if you go back and do the same race 3 years in a row, you're maybe not going to get the same conditions every year. So it's difficult to sort of like compare your times. So all you can do is just do the best you can. I mean, it is maybe a purer form of racing, whereas on tarmac or on the track, as you say, you can maybe focus on hitting that, you know, kilometer split or that mile split, and that's all you're focused on, maintaining that mile after mile after mile, or kilometer after kilometer after kilometer, whereas you're probably not going to get that consistency across a cross-country course or anything along those lines. And I mean, there's no uniformity about cross-country courses. Most ones tend to be about 6 miles long for the men and I think 4 miles for the women. But that's not to say that one's going to be 5.8 miles or one's going to be 6.1 miles or something along those lines across the league season. There's no exact measurement to it. So there's a little bit more of pure running or pure racing about it, you know, if you want to look at it like that. But yeah, it's you can maybe forget about times, or they can go out the window a little bit, because the conditions underfoot are always going to be that little bit different. And it is maybe just sort of like the more you practice on it, yeah, you might get faster, but it's, you know, it is what it is on the day. And if you take it for that, it does take the pressure off. But it can also go the other way as well, because it can build up mental resilience. You know, if you're running in tough conditions, be that underfoot or tough weather conditions in the rain. I mean, I've run in some bloody awful rain when I've been doing cross-country races as well. And of course, that makes the conditions underfoot even worse. But once you get through it, you know, it can certainly make you feel a bit more, as you said, empowered yourself, you know, sort of like you can feel a bit more positive. You can get those endorphins going round. But also it can have a very positive effect on your mentality, that you've risen to the challenge.
A challenge indeed.
Yeah. And, you know, some races will have, you know, kind of like 100 members in them, and the nationals, for instance, will have thousands of runners in them, you know. So it is, it's a great mix, is cross country. And it's just a shame that we're not getting a season this year, really, by the looks of it, because I know the NYSD have cancelled the season completely. I think the NEHL have suggested there'll be nothing before Christmas, but they'll have a look after Christmas. But I can't see, looking at the guidance that's been issued by England Athletics for a return to cross-country competition, that you can't put on the same size races, because they're limiting it to no more than 12 people racing at any one time, and they can't be racing for more than 15 minutes, which, you know, does mean either a lot of small fields going off every 20 minutes or something along those lines. Or alternatively, one way to look at it is you could have cross-country relays with maybe a short course of, you know, 2 kilometres, 2.5 kilometres, maybe 3 kilometres. And you could have 12 teams, because at least only one runner would be on the course at any one time. And if the leg was short enough, really, nobody should be on the course for more than 15 minutes. But there are a number of other considerations to be made around that. You need a separate start area, separate finish area. You need a separate sort of like parking area for those that arrive, and then people who leave have got to leave immediately after they've finished running. There's no congregation at the start, no congregation at the end. You couldn't have a tent for a team to be in, for instance, and things like that, because they can't congregate in a tent. So I can't see how, you know, unless the guidance is updated and changes, we're going to get anything like a cross-country season, unfortunately, this winter. There might be some small races that come forward, some small inter. I know the NECA and the England Athletics are both actually advocating that clubs get together and do small inter-club competitions. You know, sort of like, so you'd maybe have four clubs doing a four race series or four relay race series, each hosting one of the races, for instance, or something along those lines. But you could only then limit the number of teams that you'd be allowed to put in, or something along those lines. So it's a shame. It's a shame that we're not going to get a cross-country season, but that's no reason why we shouldn't be doing the cross-country training sessions, because at the end of the day, it's always good training.
It is, yes. And it is a shame, but it won't just... It's uncertain times won't last forever. So when normality does resume and cross-country season does return, we should go turn up to it and just enjoy it. Enjoy it for what it is and the benefits we've mentioned so far.
We should definitely fully embrace it, I think. And I come from a point of 3 years ago having, I would never participate in the cross-country. It was just not something that I was really interested in, or 3 or 4 years ago, something I was never really interested in. But now I'm quite happy to have a crack at a few races. I do take away from the fact that, you know, there are runners that, you know, sort of like who I might be better, I don't know, you know, I might be quicker than on road, but who are certainly much better off road than me. So I don't put that pressure on me when I go to a race. I tend to actually use the cross country races as a training run. I'll run them, you know, at a decent effort. You know, I'll try and maybe put that sort of like 75%, 80% effort in across the race, but it's not something that I'm going to get beat myself up about. I use it as a good hard run rather than trying to actually race it or compete, because I know that there are much better runners than me, you know, certainly over that kind of terrain.
Yeah, 100%. And sometimes you come across a little battle with one of your training partners, Richard. We had a little battle at Acklam. I think it was Acklam race number 2 of 2019, because one of Canton's, I think some hill got cancelled, so they replaced it with Acklam. And this was when I was running in a different coloured vest to the red and blue of Aycliffe. And we were just running side by side, just one person surged forward and the other one caught past and surged forward again, back and forth. And they went down to the final hill, that hill you mentioned, that short, sharp one. Unfortunately, Richard got the better of me. He pushed up. And to be fair, I think he deserved it. But That's another reason why I want cross country season back. I need to get my revenge on him.
Do you know, I didn't think you were going to tell us who got the better of who there. I was going to prompt you and try and ask you and tease it out of you, but yeah.
No, to be fair, I think I put a photo of it on social media when after the race. Because to be fair, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And I wasn't bothered about times. I don't think either of us were. Because I think it was I've done Acklam 3 times and I was probably my slowest. I probably felt great, the best I've ever felt at that Acklam course. But it's probably the worst time I ever got just because of the conditions.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's it. You just take it for what it is on the day, at the end of the day. So, right, go on then. I'll do 3 for iconic running and see if you've got it. So, we've obviously, just to recap, this iconic runner has got 6 long course cross country titles and 5 short course cross country titles to their name. This runner has won the 10,000 meter title at the World Championships on 4 consecutive occasions. And this runner holds the 2nd fastest ever marathon time. Just 2 seconds behind Kipchoge's world record.
Yeah.
Now that one, right. That one should give it to you. That one should give it to you, Corey.
I was actually going to ask beforehand. Was he meant to race in London yesterday, but he pulled out because of an injury?
Yes, that could have been my clue. Actually, I was thinking of that as being my clue. Kenenisa Bekele.
I was so looking forward, just a little side note, as probably all of us were, so looking forward to a little battle between them two. Unfortunately, well, we had a little bit of a surprise winner, but I think it was maybe a good thing he didn't race, because Kipchoge clearly wasn't on his A game, and you kind of want to see two legends battling out when they are both on their A game. Just a different perspective from my, maybe that it was a good thing he never turned up to the race.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. But then I would always, I'd maybe throw in kind of like, if Bekele had been running, it might have been a very different race anyway, because they might have put the hammer down a bit earlier. Kipchoge might have gone with him. He might have dug in a bit more. I don't know. I think, you know, that sometimes you have two runners who bring the best out of each other. And Kipchoge might have decided to push through whatever. Has he come out today and said it was an ear infection or an ear condition or something that he was struggling with? Or
I don't know, maybe the translation wasn't good, but something to do with his ear. If it was an ear infection or something along those lines, I feel for him, because it's not just the ear, it's your whole body.
Well, it would affect your balance, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Not just your balance, but like you'd be slightly fatigued just because your body's fighting off an infection. But he just said it was blocked, so... I don't think he's a type of athlete and person who's got a lot of grace about him. So I don't think it's something as simple as, oh, my ear was blocked. I think it maybe could have been an ear infection, but again, I'm not 100% sure, so I won't dwell on that too much.
I have to say, I was slightly disappointed, because you never like to see, you know, sort of like these iconic runners. I know when John... proposed this, and John did the first one, he chose Kipchoge, because I think for me he has been, you know, sort of the one of this generation of marathon runners who just obliterates everybody else, really. And I know Bekele is close to him, and Bekele's got the background as well, but for me, Kipchoge, the way he carries himself, the way he holds himself, it's how he is, you know. So like, when he's not running as well, he's incredibly humble, his background. And Kipchoge for me is the one. And I did feel a little disappointed yesterday that he, you know, he's maybe coming to the end of his career. I think that might be it now, in terms of the aura of invincibility is gone. And I, you know, he maybe isn't going to turn up on a start line now and automatically be spoken about as the winner. You know, that, as I say, that aura of invincibility has kind of like slipped a little bit, because you called it. I mean, we were messaging each other, really, weren't we? When they were still running in the group, and you sent me a message, and I'd messaged to say that I was thinking that he was about to go, and I thought he was about to put the hammer down. And you said, no, I don't think he's even going to podium here. And it was kind of like, oh, really, that's a brave call. But you were right. You were spot on. He just fell away.
Yeah, but just from previous races I've seen him do, he goes a bit earlier. He puts the hammer down a lot earlier than he was just getting as each mile ticked on. I thought, well, if he hasn't gone by now, because as each mile goes, it comes down to obviously who's still got the legs, but kind of who's got that proper sprinting technique. And Kipchoge, yeah, his overall technique is brilliant. But if it comes down to like a 2 mile race, even though you've had that 24 miles in the legs, I don't think he's the favourite against the runners in the pack at the current time. So
I was surprised about Geremu as well. I thought he was, if anyone was not going to, if Kipchoge wasn't going to win, my money would have been on Geremu any all day. But he just fell away again as well. It was a very strange race, I have to say. I don't know if the conditions on the day played the part, or again, if anyway, we've completely digressed from cross country.
Isn't it nice to talk about something actually happening instead of just random topics, which has still been great? But isn't it nice to talk about something that's actually happening in the real world?
Yes, and it was really good to see an event taking place. Now, it looked as though they'd covered everything off superbly. I mean, the fact that the course was isolated the way it was, I've seen loads of people actually commenting to say, oh, it looked really kind of like a false atmosphere. But I didn't necessarily think it did. I think it just looked like any road race. Yeah, they were going down the same roads sort of like repeatedly. But, you know, I just thought it looked like any road race. It could have been, you know, sort of anywhere. Really, I thought it was fine. I thought the actual setup was fantastic. And it might be the way forward. Who knows? You know, if this is going to be with us for a while, you know, they maybe set the bar. But then they did have a lot of money to play with as well for having that biosphere whereby people were being repeatedly tested to make sure they were all right and everything. But who knows? Who knows? I thought it was great to watch. I had to watch it on the red button though. the coverage on BBC for me wasn't amazing on the public channel, as it were, so I had to go straight to the red button to watch the elite only race, I have to say. But I tell you what was good as well, though, they did do a lot of focus on the British runners, so Johnny Meller and Ben Connor, who were all trying to get that Olympic standard. I thought that was really good. And likewise in the women's race, we had a focus on Partridge and Twell and people like that to see how they were doing. And it was really great to see Ali Dixon and Jenny Nesbitt doing the pacing duties, and Ailish McColgan doing pacing duties for sort of like some of the girls that are trying to get to the Olympic standard as well. And did you see the finish of the ladies' race as well?
No, I actually missed the whole ladies' race. I didn't realise it was on that early. Completely missed it.
Sprint finish for second. Absolutely amazing. It really was. It was really, really good. But no, it was nice. It was lovely to see some live sort of like athletics on TV again. So I think we've come to the end of cross country, and that's getting towards the end of season one. What's been your favourite podcast of this season?
I think for obvious reasons, it was the one we did on injury prevention, just because it's my area that I'm studying at the moment. So I was obviously enthusiastic about it. And to me, in my head, I don't know what other people thought when they listened to it, that I thought that was the best one we did. What about you, Paul?
Which ones? I enjoyed the first one, because I liked hearing a little bit about the history of the club, and it was great to hear from John and Rob, as you know, two of the great characters of the club, I think. So it was a great introduction to this series. I'm going to go for probably the parkrun one, though, purely because that's where my interest possibly is as well. I know you've obviously gone for your background, you know, sort of like in terms of injury prevention. Obviously, I was at parkrun event director for six years, something like that, and obviously a parkrun ambassador for a year. So just talking about parkrun, I could have talked about parkrun for about 2 or 3 hours, to be fair. So I enjoyed that one. I think that was my favorite one, but I suppose everyone will take something from them that has probably been personal to them, hopefully, as well.
And that's kind of what it's been about for season one, kind of just taking a different topic from running, and hopefully everyone can kind of relate to it. And hopefully in this, what's been difficult times, maybe motivation's been a bit wandering. I know it certainly has been for me. When lockdowns first started, I was like, right, brilliant. A lot more time for running. And then after a month or so, you're like thinking, I wish something else would happen.
We were talking beforehand. Sorry to cut you off there. We were talking beforehand about sort of like what we might do in terms of like a review of the year. And I don't want to spoil that for anybody because we may not do it or whatever. But sort of like, I think when lockdown first happened, you know, the credit that we need to give to Richard and Donna and to the others that contributed to the challenges that were put forward, you know, virtual scenarios to keep members of the club occupied and enthused about running. And it just about saw us through to August when we could restart again. Because I must admit, I think we were all running out of ideas come the end of July. But, you know, to get us through those 3 or 4 months, it was absolutely fantastic. And I do think your idea of this podcast has been brilliant as well, because it's something that, you know, we can all focus on as a club and everyone can contribute to, you know. And I dare say going forward, if anyone's got any ideas for subjects for season two, I mean, Corey's alluded to the fact that we do have some ideas already. But if anyone's got any ideas for season two, sure that would be all ears, wouldn't we, Corey?
Oh, 100%. And at the end of the day, I know it's been it was my idea and you've helped a lot along the way. It is still the club podcast, so even if for some reason I do step away from doing it, which for in the near future I can't see that happening, if someone wants to step in and take over, by all means do it, because it's all about the club and the running community that we're in. I was going to say something. Yeah, and you've just mentioned there about we had a lot of activity on our social media page, and that's where this podcast idea came from. Why not take that idea and kind of a project around it, which kind of represent our club, but also keep members engaged and hopefully other people who are listening. I said in the committee meeting the other week, now that we've got all our, we've got it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, I still don't know how to look at the data. But I kind of, I'm not bothered. I know I've just mentioned about 10 minutes ago about don't look at the data when you're running. Now I'm on about it now. But I am a scientist at heart, so I've got to look at numbers at some point. I don't really want to look at it because I don't really want to get too hooked on it. It's like with social media in general, people look at the followers or the kudos and all that and kind of think, oh, I haven't got so many for this. Why is that? Put that to one side. Who cares? Do it because you love doing it. So we're doing this podcast really because we like running and we like talking about running. And hopefully that can inspire members to keep on running in what has been, let's just face it, a rubbish year.
What you're saying there, Corey, is that only you and I actually listen back to this. Is that what you're saying? Nobody else is listening to this. It's just me and you.
And Andy, once he puts on the website, he messaged me like literally like 2 hours later. That was another good podcast, mate. I was like, haven't even released it to the members yet.
Oh, he gets a sneak peek, does he?
He does get the sneak peek. But you know, he's helped me out with, because when I first started, it's like, right, I've got this podcast, I've edited it, right, how do people listen to it? Andy helped me a lot along the way with that. So thanks, Andy. So that's why he gets
I think we've got a lot of people to thank, really, because, you know, everyone who's come on has been fantastic and fully embraced it as well. And, you know, people have come on and actually put some thought into the fact of what they want to say. We've kind of like, we do draft a little bit of a briefing sheet for ourselves so we know where we're going to go with these things. But, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, everyone else who comes on kind of like brings their own thing to it, and it's been absolutely fantastic. So I do think that we've had a very good first season anyway.
Oh, I think it couldn't have gone any better. Each person who's come on has brought something different, and they've all been fantastic. And we don't really give them... We send over our prep sheet that we've kind of done, and then we kind of talk 5 minutes before we start recording. That is literally it. Some of them are like, I don't know what to expect. And I was like, just my fifth one I'm doing, I still don't know what to expect.
I recall, and I won't mention who it was, but one contributor was swigging away on Hobgoblin, I think, while they were doing it, weren't they?
I think I definitely drank for the first few just to calm the nerves down a bit. Yeah.
It wasn't you. It wasn't you I was thinking of.
No, I know. I was kind of hiding my drink out of shot.
Oh, well, I think that wraps it up for tonight, mate. I really enjoyed this first season. Hopefully, we'll be able to put a few more together, maybe in the new year.
Yes, keep an eye out for that. Thank you all for people contributing, people listening. It's just, yeah, it's been something to do, hasn't it, mate?
Yeah, it's kept our Monday nights occupied.
Yes.
Brilliant. Right. See you later, mate.
See you later.